What are we gonna do now that he's back?
Yo, you already know what it is, your boy Rue Bans, alongside Christina, and I got a special guest. We got a special guest.
Yes, it's a bonus episode. I know we said it was over. JK, we lied. No, I'm kidding. It's a bonus episode.
Hey, but I've been talking about this for a long, long time. You know, every time I get a chance to talk about it, I'm always telling everybody to wrap it up. If you're humping and bumping, you know, make sure you wrap it up, strap it up. And today I got a special guest by the name of Dr. Philip Chan. What's going on?
Hey, thank you both for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for coming.
It's a pleasure. Honestly, I talk about this all the time. I seen the study that you did that said Rhode Island's highest rate of STD and STIs?
Ever.
Ever.
Yes.
Wow. That's scary.
Yeah, scary. So through 2016, we're talking about syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia, these STDs. We've seen the highest rates in the last 10 years. Specifically, chlamydia is the highest rates ever in the history that we've recorded.
Why do you think now more than ever it's at its highest? Do you think that now it's just being reported and people have had this, or do you think that it's just people aren't aware of having like safe sex?
Yeah, so it's a great question, right? So we're seeing a lot of new cases being diagnosed. So that could reflect the fact that we're just finding more cases and not necessarily that more people have it. So it could actually suggest that more people are going to see their doctors and testing and treatment. The other case, of course, is that there are more infections, that people may be having more sex and using less condoms. We're actually unsure of the exact reasons. We think it's probably a combination of several factors, both included.
That's interesting. And like for the listeners that don't know what an STI and an STD is, can you explain that to us?
Yeah, sure. So STD stands for sexually transmitted diseases.
Mm-hmm.
So gonorrhea, syphilis, chlamydia, these are all transmitted through sex. It can be vaginal sex, it can be anal sex, and it can even be oral sex as well. The other one that we often talk about is HIV, which is very rarely to never transmitted through oral sex, but is transmitted much more easily through vaginal or anal sex. Luckily, we are doing a relatively good job in Rhode Island, as well as across the United States. We are seeing decreasing HIV rates overall, both here in Rhode Island, as well as across the United States. The group still most affected by HIV is gay and bisexual and other men who are sex with men. So certainly if any of your listeners are guys who are having sex with other guys, they should be tested routinely for HIV as well as for these other STDs.
And how can you get an STD? No, I'm sorry. That's not the question I want to ask. You just answered that. For example, like people will say, oh, you know, I don't want to share this drink with you because I don't know what this person has. Is that a way that you can transmit STDs or STIs to somebody, like sharing a drink?
Yes, good question. So in general, no. So you have to have skin-to-skin or genital contact for most of these. So gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis, it's really you need to be having sex. And oral sex included for gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis.
What is the age group? Do you have that information that has like that?
What's the most dominant age group that has?
Yeah. So for two of those STDs, the gonorrhea and chlamydia, it's really people in their early 20s to late teens. So in fact, we start to see a bump in cases between men and women 15 to 19 years of age. So that's one of the peaks. The highest is from 20 to 24 years of age. But what that means is that young adolescents, kids in high school, need to think about getting tested and be aware about these STDs. And even before they're 15, right? Because you want to technically do some education before that. But in my opinion, one of the things we need to do is do a better job of educating our kids. And as a father, someone who has a 6-year-old and a 10-year-old, I definitely think it's important to do.
When's the right age to start teaching them these things?
That's a good question. So certainly for my 10-year-old, who's in fifth grade, I've already started talking about sex. Hopefully she's not listening. She'd be like super embarrassed about this. but, you know, it's really an ongoing conversation. You know, kids will be curious about sex starting very early in school and, you know, without providing too much detail. You know, we'll prescribe the basics or talk about the basics and then just answer questions as they come along and try to keep an ongoing dialogue.
Do you think, since you are a parent and also a professional, do you think is more, should it be more of a job for a professional to talk about sexual education, or do you think that parents should be also having this conversation?
Well, I totally think the parents should be having this conversation with their kids, but also understanding, for lots of reasons, parents may not feel comfortable talking to their kids. Mm-hmm. Parents may not always know the right answers. So I do think there should be some sort of base education, especially in schools, because that's how you're really going to engage the kids. So you know, Rhode Island does an okay job talking about sex in schools, but I definitely think we could be doing better. And I think it needs to be an ongoing discussion about how to do better, because we are, again, seeing increasing rates of these STDs, especially among 15 to 19-year-olds. So we have to do something.
So how often should you go, you know, get tested? Because, I mean, sometimes they say, some studies say a year, some say 6 months, some even say every 2 months.
Yeah, it's a good question. So for young women, so the gonorrhea and chlamydia especially can cause a range of complications, especially in young women. So it is recommended for women under the age of 25 to be screened yearly if they're sexually active. That's to prevent some of these complications. And the complications include things like pelvic inflammatory disease, which means the infection kind of goes up through the genital tract a little bit and can make people very sick. It can also cause chronic pain. It can cause infertility. Chlamydia especially is one of the number one causes in the world of infertility, and other things like something called ectopic pregnancy, which means that the fallopian tubes can get scarred down, and so the egg can start to develop and cause and burst the fallopian tube. So young women especially should be screened. And in looking at things like syphilis and gonorrhea and HIV, those STDs are really affecting, again, gay, bisexual, and other men who have sex with men. So especially for sexually active gay and bisexual men, they should be screened at least yearly. Mm-hmm. And we certainly see a subset of people, and the guidelines, the health guidelines do support screening as frequently as every 3 months. Okay. So if you're a sexually active gay or bisexual man that's having a couple partners a month, you should be screened as frequently as every 3 months.
Now, when you go for an annual checkup, regular doctor's checkup, can this stuff come up? Because, you know what I mean? When I go to my doctor, he kind of just skips over it. So I always wondered that.
Yeah. I mean, that's a problem I think that the healthcare field has to look at as well. So ideally, of course, you know, you go see your primary care doctor, they would ask you about, sexual health, especially young people in their 20s and 30s. What's one of the number one issues affecting us? It's really our sexual health. I think that in general, the primary care community, other doctors should be asking about sex. And I think some doctors do a better job than others, but I definitely think it's something to work on, and doctors should be asking people. And also for your listeners, totally advocate for yourself. You know, if you want something to be addressed, sometimes doctors aren't always comfortable bringing it up. Mm. You should totally advocate for yourself. Ask these questions, push them if needed. And if you don't feel like you're getting the right answers, perhaps you should see someone else.
Okay.
Now, is it, I know some STDs are permanent, or I guess they are forever in your system. Which STD is one that you can clear away for good?
Yeah, so we've been talking a lot about, starting with HIV. So HIV, as probably most people know, is something that you do have for life once you get it. Mm-hmm. The medications are really advanced now, meaning that one pill once a day, you can treat your HIV and bring your levels down to what's known as undetectable. That means that essentially there's very little to no HIV at all in circulating in your blood. When someone's on their meds and undetectable, they literally have a normal life expectancy. And the other big benefit is that they really don't transmit HIV to other people. Mm-hmm. So just getting someone diagnosed and on treatment is a huge thing for HIV. So HIV, unfortunately, we can't cure. There's a lot of good scientists and people looking for research. So I think in our lifetime, mm-hmm. we'll find a cure, but you can't cure it at the moment.
How about because Kanye West talked about it a couple times. He mentions how Magic Johnson had HIV, and he said that he's been cured of HIV. Now, is that an alleged thing, or?
Yeah. So Magic Johnson, one of my heroes. I did grow up in and around Boston, so Larry Bird is actually my big hero. But I was sort of grew up in the time of Magic Johnson. It's really amazing, I think, that he's still alive. It's a really testament to, I think, the advances of HIV treatment. So he has not been cured, but he is on treatment, which has controlled his HIV and allowed him to live a normal, healthy lifestyle. So he is on meds, and they're working, and that's why he's still doing well. And that's the key.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, like, let's say, for example, he was to have an offspring, having a kid with somebody, is that possible to transmit being on the medicine?
So when a mom is on the medicine and undetectable, it's essentially zero risk of the baby, you know, small risk of the baby being born with HIV. So that's another key point, is that when a woman is pregnant and who has HIV, is that we do everything we can to get that woman on medications and treated and undetectable, and that really limits transmission to the baby.
Oh, wow. That's... Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Technology has come so far.
Yeah.
How about when, for example, if someone has, I know you were going down the list, if someone has a gonorrhea, one partner has it and the other doesn't, how would they be able to maintain a sex life?
Yeah.
If possible.
So this goes back to your other point. So syphilis and gonorrhea and chlamydia are curable with antibiotics. They're caused by bacteria. And similar to a lot of other bacteria, they can be cured with antibiotics. Sometimes it's a shot in the arm. Sometimes it's a couple of pills you take. But syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia are largely curable. And so for people with those who are tested positive for those, we do recommend to get their partners tested and treated. You can definitely get reinfected. And then just abstaining from sex for a week, and then you can, you know, have sex again. So for those three, you can definitely treat and cure.
So if you're on that medicine, just hold up for a week. Hold up for a week.
I mean, you should be holding out for a little while because,
I mean,
you don't know what you're doing.
But, you know, a lot of people don't listen. Some people, you know, some people just don't read the instructions. You know, even if you tell them, they don't look or read or understand them. So it's important that they take those steps. Now for somebody that has HIV, will like their healthcare provider help them or aid them, or, you know, usually what's the case on that?
Yeah, so when someone has HIV, it is recommended to just check up with an HIV specialist, a physician, every 3 to 6 months. So we generally check some blood work, et cetera, make sure that there's no problems with the medicines. One common concern we get is the cost of these medicines can be expensive, but even for people without insurance, there's good safety net programs through the government, et cetera, at least at the moment, that cover medicines for people with HIV who can't afford medicine. So, you know, when there's a lot of my patients who are stably on HIV, I see twice a year. It's just check in, check some routine blood work, continue your medications, good to go.
Now, being that we mentioned the government, I know there was a bill that Donald Trump was trying to pass where it takes away from the health and medical
coverage
and, you know, also the research. Let me see. I don't want to ask this question in the wrong way towards more politics side, but how does this affect your job?
Yeah, I know sometimes it seems like a lot of the decisions in Washington are a world away and don't really affect us, but you know, this past year, there were a couple things projected to cut that would really have hit home, at least for the patients in the field that I work in. One is some of the cuts to the NIH. There's a lot of us, including myself, including a lot of my colleagues at Brown, that are funded by the NIH to do research. And we use a lot of that money to help support the infrastructure for different programs, et cetera. So any cuts to the NIH, which is really the research workforce of the country, would affect our ability to do a lot of this work, to work towards finding a cure, et cetera. So luckily, those cuts were reversed. There's largely a lot of bipartisan support for the NIH in Congress, so that was good. There's also through HRSA, There's a lot of safety net programs that kick in for people with HIV. There's what's known as Rhine-White funding. There's what's known as AIDS Drug Assistance Program funding. And these funding sources really kick in for people that can't afford the medicines or the cost of HIV care. So both the medicines, as well as things like doctor's visits and lab testing, and they also provide things like substance use and mental health treatment. So far, that funding has remained stabilized at the federal level, but if that were ever to be cut, it would definitely impact us in here in Rhode Island, as well as obviously many other places as well.
So is that, like we was just talking about neutrality last episode, and we was telling everybody, just make sure you go out and vote every time there is a chance to vote, because it affects everybody in different ways, and this is one of the ways that it really affects you. You know, whether you have AIDS or not, or any other STI or STD, it does affect you, because you never know what might happen in a far future. You never know.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'll certainly second that. Certainly you need to get out and vote. I think there's certainly, and sometimes I feel like this too, you feel like your vote doesn't really count, but I think that's often a misrepresentation, and certainly people need to get out and vote and make their voices heard.
So what does your job entail? Like, what do you do on a in the day-to-day basis? You work for Lifespan, correct?
Yeah, so I actually have a number of jobs. So I run the STD clinic located at the Merriam Hospital, which is part of the Lifespan. So I work there. I'm oversee the medical care there. I also work as part of Brown University. I do some research geared towards understanding some of the barriers to care and how best to access care and different challenges associated with that. And then I work part-time for the Rhode Island Department of Health as well. So there I serve as the consultant medical director for their HIV STD center there.
So you're not working with patients ever?
Oh, no. Through the STD clinic I do. And I also work, the STD clinic is located as part of the larger Merriam Hospital Immunology Center, which is the main HIV clinic in the state. So there I do see patients a couple days a week. The Merriam Hospital is the largest HIV clinic in the state. We see about 80% of the state's HIV positive patients. And we have a lot of that federal funding through HRSA, through this ADAP program, Rhine-White, that provides a lot of safety net services for people that can't afford care otherwise.
Now I Googled your name, and I seen that you was working with Yale mm-hmm. University.
Yeah, we have a lot
of. I just thought you know, it was important to add that in there, because that's a big deal. That's a nice flex. That really is. Like, how many people you know has worked for Brown University, Yale? You know, you don't. Well, me personally, I don't meet people that actually. Mm-hmm.
That are in the medical field
that has been in all these other different
accolades.
Positions, and it's really, amazing.
Well, yeah, well, thank you very much. So, we work with Yale. I worked with a couple similar physicians at Yale, as well as actually down to the University of Mississippi, at Washington University, St. Louis. We also have collaborations with UCLA and really with a number of other large universities across the U.S. And part of it's to pool our knowledge and our sort of our data and our approaches. As I mentioned, I do a bunch of research, and my research is really focused on talking to people and understanding barriers to care, how best to do things like how best to talk to people about promoting HIV, STD testing, looking at reasons why people don't test, and also around a new measure, something called PrEP. I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but there's this new medicine called PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis. It's been out for a few years, but it's essentially a pill a day that prevents HIV. So we're really still in the large, sort of in the phases of this country of ramping up that intervention. And so we're looking a little bit about how best to do that.
So I know it might be a silly question, but I seen it a lot. I did some Googling, and I seen a lot of people ask, can you test yourself at home? Are there any ways you can test yourself at home?
You can totally test yourself at home for HIV.
So and I was calling him a fool. I'm like, you can't do that.
You can. So in fact, about a year or two ago, there's a test out there called the OraSure OraQuick at-home HIV test. So it's a rapid HIV test. You actually just swab your mouth. Results are available in 20 minutes. You can buy it at any pharmacy for $39. $29.99. So it's a little bit expensive. It's definitely not cheap, but it is the same test that a lot of us use in the medical field. Now, it still has what's known as a window period, which means that if we took the test today on someone, there's still a couple months when they may have been infected where it may not be picked up on that test. We do have some better tests available through the hospital system, for sure, but the at-home test is still very good overall, and definitely for people that don't feel comfortable coming in, it is totally an option. You cannot test for a lot of the other STDs, which require more specialized labs, so you have to actually go to like your doctor to be checked for those.
So for those other STDs and STIs, how long does it take for you to get results back? Because I know for some of them, you have to wait a window period and you have to wait a duration of time, but for those that are like you can instantly detect, what are those?
Yeah, so for the syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia, those tests are run pretty routinely. I believe the syphilis tests are run every day, so you'll get a result back in about a day. And the gonorrhea and chlamydia are generally within a few days. And that may vary depending where you go. But in general, they come back within the week.
And you mentioned people not feeling comfortable getting tested. Besides fear, what is the most common reason you hear people saying that they didn't want to get tested?
Yeah, so I think, especially for young people, I think a lot of it is they don't think that they're at risk. Mm. So, and that's normal. Certainly, I was young once, and we're all a little bit invincible, don't think it can happen to us. And a lot of times you're right, but sometimes you're wrong. And I would just encourage people, if they're sexually active at all, to just talk to their doctor to get their advice, and generally try to get tested routinely for HIV and other STDs. The answer is you probably don't have it, but it's better to be safe than sorry. And we do know that a lot of people underestimate their risk.
And so when it comes to STDs, I've heard a lot of people, and I've been educated by in the past, because I don't even remember having sexual education in high school. I remember in middle school, and it was like very little. I remember them saying that the symptoms for men and women are different, and I have seen that when different people that I know that have been infected. How can a guy know that he has something if he doesn't have symptoms?
Yeah, it's a great question. So for some of these STDs, like chlamydia specifically, the vast majority of men and a lot of women don't have symptoms. So the answer is you don't know. So that's why we really encourage people to get routinely tested who are sexually active.
Oh, well, there you go. Now,
one thing I wanted to ask is, so let's say you have a friend and this person's very active. How is it that you can come to this person and let them know, hey, you should get, because some people might get offended if you tell them, hey, you should get tested. What's the best way to ask or tell somebody you should get tested?
Yeah, so I don't think there's any one right way. I think it sort of varies depending on your relationship with that person and how comfortable you are. I mean, one option would be saying, hey, I want to go get tested for STDs. Do you mind coming with me and to get tested? Mm-hmm. And that way it's not even about them, it's about you, even though in the back of your mind you think that they want to be tested. Certainly for people, if you're starting a relationship with someone, it's totally reasonable this day and age to ask that your partner get tested before you start sleeping with them or hooking up with them. So I think those would probably be my suggestions.
So it's very important to know, your partner's history, or at least ask, because you never know. You just never know.
Especially if you're not having symptoms.
Yeah, and that's why we're seeing this huge increase, and that's why it's such a problem, is because people don't realize they have it because they don't have symptoms. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay.
When it comes to STDs and STIs, what are other forms of getting it without having sexual encounter?
Yeah, so good question. So some of them, one that we haven't talked about yet is herpes virus. So herpes is something, there's two types, one and two. And a lot of people in the population have herpes virus. In fact, if you look at some of the studies, upwards of 50% of people get it. Herpes is one of those that you can also, that once you have it, you can't get rid of. A subset of people who do develop herpes do get frequent outbreaks. There's medications to treat that. A lot of people are certainly can be worried about this, but that, for example, can be skin-to-skin contact. So you don't even need to have any sexual activity per se. But also realize a lot of these STDs, it's not like, if someone has an STD and you hook up with them, there's always a chance that you can get it, but there's also chances that you can't get it. Even if you hook up with someone with an STD, the transmission rate or attack rate, what we call, is not always 100%. Well, it's not 100%. So just because you hook up with someone with an STD who you may not know doesn't mean that you'll get them. But certainly for things like for HSV, herpes simplex virus, you can get it through skin-to-skin contact.
Now, I heard that everybody's born. I don't know if this is true, but a form of herpes, like when you get a cold sore, that's herpes.
Well, that's the other thing. A lot of people get herpes. It can be associated with sexual contact for sure, but you know, a lot of people acquire herpes when they're younger, as in the form of cold sores. That's a herpes simplex virus, and a lot of people have it, and a lot of people get it not by sexual contact. So it's often difficult for us to tell whether or not someone got it through sex. When we talk about herpes and STDs, generally we refer to genital herpes infections. So people can get groups of ulcers and have outbreaks around their genital regions, which tends to be sexually transmitted.
Now, with herpes, if somebody has herpes and they're not on an outbreak, could you still catch the herpes off that person?
The answer is yes, although the chances are low. And that's, unfortunately, we don't have a good answer for some of these. You know, when someone has herpes who doesn't have an outbreak, we generally counsel people that they should use condoms, which can help reduce the risk. We generally counsel them that they should tell their sexual partners. But even when they're not having an outbreak, there is still a slight chance of transmitting.
So you said using condoms reduces risk, so it still doesn't guarantee that you won't get an STD using condom.
Correct. Although for all the STDs we've talked about, herpes, gonorrhea, chlamydia, syphilis, and HIV, it's clearly, we know that condoms clearly work. Nothing, unfortunately, in life is 100%, but certainly condoms are effective in reducing risk for all these STDs.
I know a lot of people that say they're allergic to condoms. Like, where would they go and how would they go about it?
Yeah, so one thing to note is that different condoms fit differently and there's different materials, et cetera. So certainly if you have a bad experience with one brand of condoms or one type of condoms, you may want to try other condoms. Condoms are freely accessible across the state. The Rhode Island Department of Health does give them out for free. People can Google Department of Health condoms, and there should be actually a map of where you can get them for free. I know that condoms can also be expensive.
Yeah.
You know, so definitely for we definitely obviously encourage condom use, especially if you're having casual partners. And for people that, you know, there's lots of reasons, as you're sort of alluding to, that people don't want to use condoms for one reason or the other. You know, they do take some of the sensation out of sex. They do feel less good, if you will. Some men struggle sometimes to get erections with condoms. And sometimes, you know, you're drunk or high and forget the condoms. Sometimes they're not always there in the heat of the moment when you're hooking up. So there's, you know, there's other ways to protect yourself too. One is just being tested routinely to make sure that you don't have an STD. Once you have one STD, you're usually at a higher likelihood of getting another STD as well, because it's sort of broken down some of your skin, some of the linings, which is the first line there. So just testing routinely is a good way to protect yourself and stay on top of it. And then in terms of HIV, things like PrEP, so pre-exposure prophylaxis, if you can't commit to using condoms and you're at higher risk, you can take a pill a day to prevent HIV.
When they go to the clinic, is it all confidential? Because I know, for example, if you was to go through your insurance, it might have to be, you know, on record, and, you know, some people might not want that. So how do they move around that situation?
Yeah, so good question. So that's one of the things we get all the time is about, you know, are things confidential? So things are totally confidential. You know, no one should be releasing, whether it be us or any other institution, no one should ever be releasing your information, medical information, without your permission. So everything's totally confidential. We would never share it with anyone without your permission. That being said, your information, especially if you are insured, is shared with the insurance companies. You know, we do get concerns about spouses occasionally. So some of these things are sent home and a spouse or a longer-term partner may see it, especially for younger people who may still be on their parents' insurance. Occasionally, they may see the bill as well. So unfortunately, there's not a great way to deal with all this. We do try to place a number of checks in the system to try to limit that from happening. You know, I just want to assure everyone that everything is totally confidential, but there may be different parties that may see at least, not necessarily the results, but just the fact that you had some testing done and the cost of it, per se.
When it comes to sexual education, what flaw do you see in schools that you think that they should work on for kids to know about STDs and or just sex overall?
Yeah, I think it needs, again, to our earlier point, I think it needs to be a little bit of an ongoing discussion. It can't just happen during a single semester, you know, in grade, whatever grade X you are. I think it needs to be, you know, yearly, ongoing. I think there needs to be the presentation and the education needs to be what we call evidence-based, which means it needs to be studied to make sure that it works, to make sure that people retain it, that they're aware. And I think that we need people engaged and interested in talking about this stuff to make sure that it's communicated appropriately and effectively. And there needs to be systems in place to make sure that that kids are obtaining this knowledge and that they're, you know, that you know that you can, you remember what you're taught and that you're applying it.
Well, Ruben, you were onto something.
So I just wanted to clarify something, because a lot of times, you know, we're heavy on talking about relationships and a lot of people do cheat. But is it possible that you can catch a STD off your partner and the person is not cheating?
Is it possible to catch an STD off your partner who's not cheating? The answer is, depends how long you've been together. So some of these STDs can hang around for an awful long time. So it is possible that you have been with your partner for a year, and you may get an STD at that point that your partner has had but wasn't cheating on you, that they got before you were together. So that is possible. You know, for HIV, hangs around forever. Syphilis, you know, herpes, some of these things hang around for months and months, if not years.
I wanted to put that out there, and I feel like, you know, I see a lot of people, like just the other day on Twitter, I seen some girl write on somebody's car, "You gave me herpes and broke his windows." And I was like, oh, wow, that's pretty much. And she was saying that the guy was cheating on him. And that's why I brought the question, you know, and asked you, because some people think that automatically, because they caught a STD after the fact, that their partner is cheating, you know.
Yeah. So not necessarily. Again, as I mentioned, it usually takes, at least for herpes, it can take many times before you actually transmit. It's not like you have sex once with someone who has herpes and you get it. It's usually multiple times. So certainly possible that you could be with someone for, you know, many months, if not, you know, over a year, and get it then.
And I've heard also, it, which is really disturbing, but I think it's important to bring up, I've heard people say, well, if we both have it already, why not just keep having unprotected sex? Can that make things worse, or will that just be what it is?
Most times, in terms of things like herpes or HIV, if both partners have it, there's really not a whole lot of risk, so that's fine. I mean, we also see in the community, for people that have, a lot of people who have HIV aren't always using condoms, because sometimes they may say, I already have HIV, what else, you know, can I get? That being said, a lot more people with HIV are undetectable now, meaning that, right, they're taking their medicines and they're doing well, so they're a lot less likely to transmit. But there is certainly a whole lot of condomless sex going on.
Maybe it was a fake article, but I also seen that some lady had sex with, I think it was over 200 men after she was infected with HIV. If you know that you have HIV, could you go to jail for that? Because that is kind of using your body as a weapon.
True. So that, you know, that argument's been made. So I get, what we're talking about is real, is really, is HIV, transmission of HIV, criminalized? And so in most states, the answer is no, is that you can't. Here in Rhode Island, the answer is no. And the reason why most of us support that is because if you criminalize HIV transmission, a lot of times people will be a lot more hesitant to speak up. You know, we have a number of effective public health interventions that we employ. One is partner notification. So we do ask you, if you ever acquire HIV, we ask you who your partners are. We want to make sure that they get tested and on treatment, et cetera. And when you criminalize HIV, it sort of drives everything underground, and people aren't really as willing to share information about what happened. And so it's harder to do public health. It's harder to do medicine in general. The other fact is that, and this is, you know, is that it takes two to tango, right? And, you know, you always got to keep in mind that someone may not be telling you the truth, et cetera. So if you don't know the person that well, then you should consider using condoms if you're uncomfortable. A lot of places, including our STD clinic, will give results out to patients in, you know, in the form of a letter. So it's totally, I think, and you're right, within your right, that if you're starting to a relationship with someone, to ask them for documentation of their HIV and STD status and if it was recently done. So for all these reasons, a lot of us don't really believe that HIV should be criminalized. It's more effective to try to talk to people and do things like partner notification.
For example, somebody that was under the influence and was taken advantage of, do they use that as...
That I'm unsure about. I know certainly in rare cases where there's intent to transmit HIV and where that can be proved, that can definitely be more of a criminal case. So yeah, there's a whole lot of situations, and certainly if someone's knowingly infecting others with HIV, then I think that bumps it up. But you know, again, it takes two people to have sex. And so I think that, you know, people have to advocate for themselves and be aware and be educated.
How do you feel about the foundations like RED and I forgot the other one. But I know U2 is heavily involved with RED, and they do like the World AIDS Day concert. How do you feel about those foundations, and do you think that they're actually making a difference?
I do think a lot of the foundations are making a difference, and I'll point to a couple. One is the Bill Melinda and Melinda Gates Foundation, which has a worldwide presence. I mean, they've done amazing work across the globe, and you know, a lot of work in sort of developing countries which don't have a lot of resources. They've really made huge strides and have really defined how a lot of people work in these countries. So without a doubt, places, even locally, things like Rhode Island Foundation, who is really one of the major philanthropic organizations here in Rhode Island, they give lots of money for causes HIV and related. And yeah, I will say yes. What it allows us to do, a lot of times you think, you know, people are giving out $10,000, $20,000, may not be a whole amount of money, but what it allows us to do is to really pilot different things to see if they work. So if pilot projects, short, small scale pilot project work, then we can generally obtain larger and more sustainable sources of funding. So I do think the foundation grants are important. I do think they're an important part, as are larger research grants like NIH grants as well.
All right. So with the grants, when is there like a certain time that you file the grants, or it could be at any time?
Yeah, it varies per the different organization. For the larger NIH grants, there's usually a few times a year where they have deadlines. So you can submit any time during those. In fact, there's one coming up in January for us where we're submitting a couple grants. And then what a lot of the other foundations and institutes do is they release, you know, a call for grants, and they're due by this date, and then you submit.
And a lot of the clinics, like I'm always nosy, so I'm always looking, you know, like what else do they give? But usually a lot of the clinics will give you a pack of condoms with a lot of lube. Why is that?
Yeah, so condoms are also, they feel better as well when you use lubricant. So we generally package them together. We, you know, people often want more than one condom, so we put them in packs and we include a lube with it. But yeah, at our STD clinic, we give out condoms for free. And again, people can Google Department of Health condoms, and there's a number of places in and around the state where you can get them.
I used to do Youth in Action Street Team. Mm-hmm. That's why I asked, because we used to give out condoms and lube, but a lot of people would ask, and they're like, I don't want that, I don't need that. I thought it was important to ask, like, why it has it in there.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't honestly know what to do with the lube.
Yeah, no, it can definitely, it can make condoms feel better. It can increase sensation. It can make them work better. And certainly for people having anal sex, lubricant is generally needed and should be used.
Well, there you go, listeners. If you're getting freaky, you know what to do.
I can't.
Have that freaky sex, but safe.
Safe sex is important.
That's very important. And it ties into so much other things that you said earlier, mental health. Like, when it comes to mental health, what's the best way to balance and,
to deal with it,
you know? Because it's a big weight on your shoulders. And not everybody's strong to just, like, walk into a clinic and be like, yeah, I'm going to take this test, and I'm going to find out, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to try to find the steps. But usually, we're all human, and we're weak, you know? Unfortunately, the older you grow, the weaker you are. You don't think? I think the older we get, like,
I think it's the opposite.
I observe people, like, kids are so fearless. They don't fear nothing. Maybe the dark, but that's nothing. But like meeting people and talking to people, they have no fear. They're always honest to them. But then when it comes to like an older person, they hide things. They tend to like, you know, hold things back. And like for somebody like that dealing with that weight on their shoulder, how is it possible that they can maneuver and where should they go? Like, you know, any place like
support.
I guess what I would say to that is certainly is that you just need to address it, at least physically. Certainly having any STD is not the end of the world, even though sometimes it may seem like that, both physically and mentally and emotionally, and certainly in the context of different relationships. But the important thing is just to deal with it, realize it's not the end of the world, and just get accurate advice. I'll give a shout out to our clinic. It's located at Merriam Hospital, 1125 North Main Street. You can walk in Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 12:30 to 3:30, and there's educated staff to talk to you about anything you need related to STDs. It's really, really the premier STD clinic, sexual health clinic here in the state. Check out our website, doitright.org. You can see different ways to... Yeah, I came up with that one night myself, actually.
It's clever.
The RI in right is highlighted for Rhode Island. Mm. It has about a dozen different ways to protect yourself from against HIV as well as other STDs, as well as some local resources, including things that we talked about, PrEP, the home-based HIV test, and places to get condoms as well.
What are some local groups you can go for counseling?
Yeah, so for certainly for HIV STD testing, places like Planned Parenthood, fantastic. AIDS Project Rhode Island, AIDS Care Ocean State, some of our very close collaborators. There's a number of other organizations that work with specific groups like Sojourner House, fantastic. Mm-hmm. There's Project Weber and Renew. So there's a lot of other community organizations out there that provide some of these safety net services, including related to sexual health.
And are these all on your website as well?
Yes.
To loosen up, I wanted to play a little game, get to know you a little better, to loosen it up, you know, because it's a lot of information to take in. So I want to introduce this game. We played it before with one of our guests. Shout out to Kuji. It's called This or That. And, you know, it's just to learn a little bit about you without trying too hard. It's fast. So
sounds
you got to.
I'll be fast. Know.
All right. Coke or Pepsi?
Pepsi.
Rum or wine?
Depends on the day.
Summer or winter?
Hey, I travel down to the Dominican once a year, and I would take the rum down there over any wine here any day.
Brugai. Hey.
Brugada.
Rap or R&B?
R&B.
Old school, new school R&B.
Ooh, I'm getting a little old school.
The baby making stuff right there. You rather call or text?
Text. And don't ever leave me messages. I hate checking my voicemail.
City or country?
I'm a little bit of a country boy. I grew up in New Hampshire.
Interesting. Now, Biggie or Tupac?
I don't know enough to have an opinion on that one. Okay. I'm going to stay out of that debate.
Colgate or Crest?
They're both bad.
Steak or fish?
Steak.
Weights or cardio?
We'll go with weights. I've never been a runner.
Rhode Island or New York?
Rhode Island.
That's what I like. I like hearing. That's two guests in a row that said Rhode Island over New York. Let's go. Shout out to
why we live here.
Yeah. So before we end it, what did you, for those who maybe want to go into the same field, what did you study in college? What was your major and what did you do in medical school?
Yeah, so I actually went to the medical school at the University of Vermont in Burlington, so very country-like. I didn't have a whole lot of sexual health training, and it's something I really learned on the fly. And as I've sort of grown in my career here, I've really got interested in more the public health, the sexual health, HIV, STDs. So we have a lot of students that come work with us. Definitely, if you're out there listening, looking to get involved, please contact us. We work closely with a lot of these community organizations that I mentioned who are always looking for volunteers. So there's definitely ways to get involved regardless of the level of education or training that you've had.
How can we get all this information out to the schools that aren't getting the information properly?
Well, I think the schools, they're working on it. And I think they're overall generally, reasonable and approachable. I think that, you know, us as parents, us as a community need to advocate to our school system. Because I think one reason a lot of the school systems are a little bit hesitant sometimes about talking about this is because they fear repercussions from parents, from the community. So I think advocating on behalf of us, the community, is really the way to push it forward.
Mm-hmm. Now, Before we go, you know, I want to ask you, what was the biggest, before you got into college, because I know she already asked, how did you get into the medical field? What did you want to be before that?
I actually always wanted to be a doctor. It always appealed to me, sort of the ability, both the science behind it and also the ability to help people. So I always wanted to be a doctor. I didn't always know what kind of doctor I wanted to be, but I was always sort of drawn towards the medical field.
Is there anything you could tell our listeners that they should do if they're going in that direction? Like what should they focus on?
Yeah, so I get this question from a lot of people in college, from even before, and you know, the bottom line is you have to do something really to distinguish yourself nowadays. And so what does that mean? It means just do something. And what is that something? It's really anything, but really find something that you're passionate about, invest time, try to make a difference, try to help someone, try to do something. It doesn't really matter what you do. You just got to do something.
Okay. And can you tell our listeners where they can find you at, just once again, so they have all the information that they need?
Sure. You can find me at the Rhode Island STD Clinic, located over at the Merriam Hospital. It's an outpatient clinic there. It's located at 1125 North Main Street, right here in Providence, Rhode Island. And check us out on doitright.org.
Do it right.
It's a wrap.
It's a wrap. And literally, make sure you wrap it up. Wrap it up. I'm tired of telling everybody to wrap it up, and I hear more and more people talking about not wrapping it up. So instead of raw dogging, put the hat on. It's not that hard. With that said, it's a wrap.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming out. Thank you for tuning into an episode of Spark Up PVD. And if you haven't subscribed already, what are you waiting for? You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or SoundCloud. And don't forget to follow us on all social media at Spark Up PVD.